Hi, this is Phil Lairness, sitting alongside my wife, Lily Lairness. As we travel through the third decade of the 21st century, it's good to know that the Midweek Drive and Midweek Drive Morning Editions continue to produce a minimum of 4 hours of weekly audio goodness on Siren Radio and SouthsideBroadcasting.podbean.com.
Did you know that the moon shines brighter when you come through? With tears on your cheek, reflecting the vase in my living room. The scene gets you every time. The girl says that she loves him too. Well, I wonder why. A stop sign has never looked so peculiar to me. My motivation only wants to push ahead. When I'm with you in the night, I'll say that I need you. If you wonder why, you don't need a reason to call me out on all the stupid things I say when I'm thinking out loud. You know that I'll fall for you anytime that you like, and I act like a fool sometimes. Your hair flowed and the tides rose and swept me away, tumbling through the ocean blue. All I can see is gray, staring at the clouds. I hope that you're feeling okay, baby, by the way. You don't need a reason to call me out on all the stupid things I say when I'm thinking out loud. You know that I'll fall for you anytime that you like, and I act like a fool sometimes.
What an outstanding piece of music, and indeed it's entitled The Joys of Reason by a chap called Asher Belsky, or possibly Belsky, somebody who's connected with one of our special guests today, who is actually online at present, but I don't think she can actually hear us. So we'll just have to wait until we can actually sort of say hello to Suzanne Hillary. But Pamela Sue Mann is with us. And Pamela, after all, Suzanne is one of your stable of fantastic connections within New York City. How are you, Pamela?
I'm excellent. Thank you. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you perfectly well, Pamela. All's great from that point of view. And we can also hear our ace actor from The Joys of Last of the Summer Wine, from Pirates of the Caribbean, from so many other marvelous things, and, of course, illustrator these days and general all-round artist, Jonathan Lindsley. Welcome back, Jonathan. How are you?
Thank you. I'm very well. Thank you, Alexis. And thank you for inviting me on your show. Wow. It's always good to be here.
Exactly. It's always nice, because I seem to recall actually in your first Zoomer that we had, you also had one or two challenges in actually hearing us or us hearing you, etc. So it's okay. We can lip read. I'm not sure whether Suzanne can actually hear us at all at this particular stage. Can you hear us, Suzanne? Jonathan, what did you make of Reason?
Oh, loved it. Thank you. Yes, it's it was. I'd never heard it before, or the song, and I very much enjoyed it. Thank you. Yes, and thank you for sharing it with me.
Well, you know, it was all part and parcel of the rich tapestry that we've actually got there. And hopefully Suzanne can actually, as she's connecting to audio now, it's almost like a countdown, this. Jonathan, you loved what we've just heard, which is Reason, of course. Suzanne, just give us a little bit of backstory in terms of what we've just been listening to, which, of course, is Reason, performed by a fabulous 16 years of age, Asher Belsky.
That's correct. Asher Belsky. Oh, I met him maybe when he was 12 backstage at a big jam with, you know, Allman Brothers members and Warren Haynes and all these people. And he was just this very aggressive little guitarist who wanted to learn everything. So cut through. He was just produced by my client, Jörg Carlson from Sweden, who also is in Government Mule in Los Angeles. And is really, that's really one of the, it's the second song that they've done, but they've done a complete album. So yes, he lives in San Francisco. He's in school. He just finished Berklee School of Music summer program. And we all hope that he will move on to great things. He's just a wonderful little songwriter, an amazing guitarist, and just a humble and good kid.
Yeah, and of course, very much born in the 21st century. Jonathan, you enjoyed it. Any questions you'd like to put to Suzanne about the artist or the way it was put forward and so on?
Well, I had no idea that he was only 16, did you say he was? Which is extraordinary. It's wonderful at that age, though. There is a kind of self-assurance that goes with being a teenager. I found anyway that when I was 16, I was much more confident than I was when I was 26 in a kind of strange way. I think because you don't fear failure at all. You just go ahead and do it. But what is intriguing is in the business world, when you're representing somebody of that age, how difficult is it, if he's still in school, etc., to get him to fulfill contracts and all that kind of stuff? Is that a problem when somebody's very young like that? I mean, you said you've known him since.
No problem. No. His mother and father are dear friends. They came here to the Catskills this summer with us. I've already had him sent to record at the Golden State Warriors in San Francisco in front of 20,000 people, playing a halftime, playing the national anthem. And he's just a really easygoing person, but it is, I'm a mom. I love those parents. I've worked with a lot of youth and have broken, like Brandon Niederauer is another one, which we can talk about, but he's not my client now. But, you know, it's just easy. I mean, I understand, and I'm giving them opportunities. And plus, we're letting him go to school. So just to answer that, no, the parents are lovely. We all get along great. And then in terms of Reason, he had some of the most ringer players working with him. You know, Jeff Young, who works with Jackson Brown, and Steely Dan, has with Steely Dan. You know, Jorgen, who works with everybody. And just tons of very good musicians who are supporting. I find that the elder musicians, particularly in our communities here in the United States, love to support the youth. So that's how it works.
Oh, excellent. That's great. I mean, obviously, we read of the disasters that some young performers have when they can't adjust to the fame and the pressure and stuff like that. I suppose when they get worldwide fame, I mean, there's a lot of pressure on a young performer. And I just wondered if there's anything that, I mean, it's great if his parents are supportive, and it's great that you're helping him and other older musicians are helping him. And I think, you know, because he clearly has got lots of talent, which is, you can hear that in the singing and the voice and the way he's playing. It is amazing. So that's great news. I suppose in a week we hear of what's happened to like Britney Spears and people like that, you know, I mean, over her mental health problems and stuff. And because she started as a kid, I worry that that there's a lot of pressure on young people in those circumstances, you know, from outside influences, the money changes hands, people, you know, manipulate at that age. It's quite difficult. So it's great to hear that there's a lot of support around him, which is the question I was raising.
Yes. Well, he's probably watched the documentaries and you know, I just find the kids today are smart. They're not getting into drugs. They really see how you can be successful. Well, he can anyway. I mean, he really stays clear of that. And again, it's just the beginning. He hasn't been doing 225 dates a year under the pressures of a label yet. So we'll see. But yeah. I have all the faith that he'll be fine.
If he's looked after by Suzanne Hillary, he'll be okay. I just want to check the pronunciation, Suzanne. Is it Asher Belsky or Belsky?
It's Asher Belsky, but funny you should say that. I like Belsky, and I just think it should be like Madonna. But anyway, that it is Asher Belsky. And we're kind of wondering, you know, Jorg and I were talking, if maybe eventually he would just be Asher. It might be a little easier for people. I'd throw that to you professionals. What do you think?
Well, indeed, if you look at Kanye, he's changing his name to just Ye. So he could actually just be or Key. Just a thought. yes. Suzanne, let's do a little bit of background for yourself. You're an entertainment industry tour de force. You've actually been working with performing visual artists, screenwriters, musicians and music composers for over three decades. You started off in the 20th century. Fantastic. Share with us some of the kind of key elements that you've worked through, because I mean, there are some really fantastic things there. Management officers for Tony Bennett. I mean, you've been following and living the dream in many ways.
Yeah, I came out of Montreal from university, actually in psychology and management. And I landed at Tony Bennett's office for 5 years. And I have to say, to this day, that was the foundation for me. The best thing for me to have happen. But that was 5 years. And through those times, I met the Clive Davises and I met the Tommy Mottolas. And I was really put up front, being educated. They let me run. I was running those offices for Danny and Tony Bennett, you know, having phone calls from Dionne Warwick. And, you know, and then the biggest thing for me, the trigger was Scorsese was looking for an opening title track for Goodfellas. And we had Rags to Riches. So those were the first contracts I started to see in licensing. And I went, oh, licensing, music, you know, this begets that. But in any event, the next pivotal thing, I mean, I can go on and on. Should I continue with the biography? Because, I mean, you do tell me, but that's how it started anyway.
I mean, Jonathan, clearly Suzanne is one of those vital aspects of the entertainment industry, which as an actor, you know, appreciate the agent. And Pamela Suman, obviously, Pamela, from your point of view, actually having somebody who's got your back for it from that perspective. Jonathan, you've had a quick look at some of Suzanne's awesome work. Any questions you've got that you'd like to put into the mix at present?
Well, the music industry is quite different, I think, from the acting world. I was interested in the crossover when you were talking about Scorsese looking for music for a movie, because I presume that's at some point where things cross over slightly. I mean, obviously the music is very important in a movie, and I wondered if how that works. It's quite interesting. If a producer is looking for a track, can you suggest musicians or contract a musician to sing the theme tune to a movie? Is that how it works, or does the producer say, well, we really like this guy, has he got any, you know, can we use his song?
We'd like to have Pamela Suman's Ouch featured on our next Academy Award winning motion picture, that's for instance.
Pamela and I have known each other, I was thinking today, maybe 18 years, and you know, unfortunately, and Spooky Ghost, you know, Dear Jerry Leonard. And they have been part of WACBIZ, Writers and Artists Cooperative. And it is such a crapshoot. You know, it really is, because, you know, as much as I and will work extra hard at this, with the COVID productions coming back, it just makes things a little more difficult. But the answer to this is it's hitting it at all angles. I pitch in place. I go to IMDb Pro and Hollywood Reporter. I look at what's in production. I'm constantly reaching out to producers, meeting directors, you know, as well, and film companies. Anyway, I think, I understand that you're shooting this film. We thought the song would be good. Right now, to this day, whether it's George Jacoulis or Sue Jacobs or any of the key music supervisors, they're friends of mine. I see them in LA. I see them in New York. And they do. They call me up and they will find very obscure things off the site. They want like an OK Go, somebody they've heard of. I try to lead the horses to the wall. Water, but I can't always make them drink, and it is so very frustrating. So yes, even a screenwriter starting down the bottom with somebody who has a script that you know is being optioned. Oh, oh, in that scene, I saw that an overture, and I know that this song would be good. I am always suggesting and pitching, and you know, sometimes and these days not as often as I'd like, you know, placing the songs firmly to the production.
Oh, that's fascinating insight. That, I mean, because you know, it's not something I was aware of. But so that's really, I mean, that means you work very hard for your clients, basically. I mean, that's quite extraordinary.
I wish it was more. I wish it was more, because people do want to talk to me. People do. It's almost like I have an iPod in my brain. I have to be quick on my feet. I am working on our site. We're relaunching. My son is a computer science engineer for a company called Unity, which we don't have to go there, but he knows what he's talking about. He's a young guy up in Montreal. He is re-algorithmically programming WACBIS for me, I think for my birthday next month. But I was just up in Montreal and I saw what he was doing, to the point where you or anybody, Pamela or you know, I don't care if it's Tarantino, they can go in, you know, with beats, with a lyric, with a theme, and they could go to the website and figure it out themselves. It doesn't have to be me necessarily, or just by a simple genre. There's a lot to go on in this business, and there's a lot more that we all could be doing to help the artists. And so I just figured, he talked to me about this in the summer and said, listen, we have to change this so people, it's more accessible and people can find things themselves without having to take your time up when you should be doing other things. So that's my thing for the end of this 2021, what I'm working on.
Jonathan, just cast your mind back a decade or so when you're on the set of Pirates of the Caribbean and you're in line there. Do you just focus on your acting role, or was there a part of you which thought, I wonder what Gore Vidal's mind is with respect to music for this? What sort of music would he actually have in mind? Or do you have a soundtrack yourself when you're actually on the film set?
I think you meant Gore Verbinski.
You're quite right, Gore Verbinski. Yeah. Easily confused. One writes about the decline of the American sort of scenario, and another one does pirates movies.
Well, I'll be honest with you. In terms of the music, I mean, I think is it Hans Zimmer wrote the music for Pirates of the Caribbean, and right. You're not aware as a performer, as an actor in a movie, what the music is going to sound like, but what you actually realize is how important the music is in terms of the mood, the atmosphere, and everything else. And when you watch the movie, how much is enhanced by that theme tune, the different clever things happen in movies. I was amazed that there is a theme for Jack Sparrow, there is a theme for Elizabeth Swan, there is a pirates theme, there is a and so on. So I mean, the music is interwoven within the action of the thing. And a question I wanted to ask Suzanne is, are you yourself musical? I mean, do you write, play or enjoy music? I mean, or is it something you're just good at knowing how to place a song or suggesting a song? I mean, I'm fascinated, really. I'm intrigued by your job, basically.
Well, I'm passionate about music and grew up with very famous artist, uncle and grandfather, grand pianos in the house. But I did musical theater growing up as a kid. I was Brigida in The Sound of Music at Georgetown University when I was like 10. You know, I was a singer, but and I studied music and I was in classical chorales. But you know, my mother, when I landed in New York and I was auditioning in New York back in 87, and my mom said to me, who's Australian, she's like, Suzanne, darling, somebody has to be a fan. Somebody has to be a fan. I mean, Do you and your friends all have to go and be actors and jumping on improvisational stages and auditioning for musicals? And I'm like, no. And then I got a job at Tony Bennett's and I loved being on that side. I had a paycheck. Mm-hmm. I had insurance. I was like, wow, I'm doing better than my friends. But it was never, I didn't feel like I was better than them or anything, or a loss of theater and music at all. I just felt that gave me a core baseline. And then it's a music class working for a Tony Bennett where you're in studios and you're dealing with like even people like Dizzy Gillespie or any of the famous producers that work with him, even Ralph Sharon, his musical director. I mean, I have been entrenched in music from the time I was born, you know, probably in utero. So I just feel that right now I'll call myself a fan and a supporter of the artists and actors like yourself, and just we'll let you do that, and I'll be the fan and help support that as best as I can.
Excellent. Well, I mean, it's Paul McCartney famously said that he was raised in music, that he, you know, his family all sang songs around the piano. And when his dad no longer could play the piano, he took over playing and his aunts and uncles all sang. So he was steeped in music. He had it inside him. And that sounds like a similar sort of experience that you had. You were raised in music. And as a result, you have an understanding of how it works and why it works and the emotional effect of music, which is very important in movies, I think, you know, particularly if you're placing songs in a film, you want to connect emotionally with the storyline of the film, which is something that obviously your skill is in hearing that and providing that. So that's fascinating to me, because I think it's very important how much we respond to art in all its forms, visually and orally and all that kind of stuff. So it's fascinating. So thanks for that answer, because it's taught me something. Thank you.
Exactly. It's not so much raised in music, more lost in music. Well, that's a Sister Sledge moment from, again, back in the day. Pamela, listening to that, any thoughts or comments you'd like to have in terms of, obviously, your own sort of background in terms of developing your musical career and style and format?
Oh, well, that's very interesting. You know, I was thinking about Suzanne, and I just really want to say that I'm pretty convinced that Suzanne is a genius. And she has so many, she's so very positive, and she's such a, like, an instantaneous dot connector. You know, she just sees this and sees this, and she just has a gift for it. She has a radar for it. And I think that it's interesting when you're talking about your trajectory, and it makes perfect sense that you should be exactly where you are doing what you're doing, because that's a talent and a skill that very few people have. You know, and then maintaining the positivity. I have never seen Suzanne angry or pissed off or having a diva moment.
Pamela, surely, you know, there must be moments where you're trying to connect on a Zoom call, and yet for some reason you're getting all sorts of bizarre things, and you can hear the person who's speaking, or you can't hear the person speaking, they can hear you. That must get you a little bit angry every so often, surely.
Actually, that's just the woodland fairies that live up around where Suzanne lives. I've seen them, and sometimes they mess with your technology. They seem to follow me around, even when I'm in the city, but I don't know. There you go. Well, it's interesting.
No, but Pamela, they're there now. Anne told me that they're there now. So, no, they're intervening.
You know, it is a crooked road that you cannot see in, you know, you can't see ahead of you. You don't know where it's all leading. You know, it's interesting for me because I went to Berkeley as well, where young Asher went to, and I have not had the pleasure of listening to his music yet, but I will as soon as we're done with the Zoomer. I'm very excited. And Berkeley is a very interesting place because, and now there are programs for young people that they could take a summer camp there. And they didn't do that when I went there, back in the dark ages. But it's fantastic that they provide that. So when I was at Berkeley, there was a very groovy counselor that, you know, they meet with you. They're like guidance counselors. They meet with you and you talk about what your aspirations are. And so it was very interesting because very quickly in our meeting, he got to the heart of who I was. He understood it, even though I didn't. And he gave me sage advice that I followed, which led me to remaining poor, which was excellent because it kept me being authentic in myself. And as a singer-songwriter, as an artist, you know, my number one soapbox, you know, item would be authenticity and developing that authenticity and staying with it. And the guidance counselor said to me, he's like, what do you think you should do? And I came up with some inane answer. And he said, no, what you really want to do, now listen to me, is you want to realize your actual potential. And of course, you know, I had a big question mark over my head, like, what the hell do you mean? But throughout the years, I have come to understand that. And the best advice that I got from friends and mentors was keep doing what you do. Don't become a side person. It, you know, it was all advice to keep me poor, but it was actually fine because what it did was it kept me honest. And, you know, that's the one thing that I would say to any singer-songwriter, anyone that creates their own music, is you've got to have authenticity. And sometimes you just need good friends and gurus and people saying, you know what, just keep doing what you do. Don't look over there and do what they're doing. do what you do and develop that confidence and express yourself in your very, very unique way. And then don't worry about the results, you know.
Jonathan, does that resonate with your own experience when you were speaking to the career tutors back in the day and you might have said, oh, I fancy being an actor, et cetera. Did they say, you know, continue being authentic?
No, they didn't, unfortunately, no. Sadly, no, what happened to me was that I was told, because this is really back in the dark ages, when I was at school, my careers teacher, I mentioned the fact that I might want to become an actor. And he said something along the lines of, are you sure? Because a boy like, you know, you play rugby and boys like you don't become actors. Because actors are a certain type of person. And I said, well, what do you mean? And he said, well, you know, boys who join the Merchant Navy and boys and I was like, so he was skirting around the idea of saying that only gay people became actors, and that he thought I probably wasn't gay and therefore I shouldn't ever think about a career in the theatre because that was such a camp profession. But I think the world's changed quite a lot since those days. But I'm fascinated with what Pamela said, because authenticity is very important. But also, I think creativity is good for the soul. And I think that by creating, not worrying about who your audience is going to be, but basically by creating, is something that's good for everybody. And I think one of the things I've learned through my art, from painting portraits, which is what I now do more of than anything else, I found that it's really good because it's something that brings joy to people, and it brings joy to me that I can bring joy to people. And I think writing music does the same thing. I think basically you connect on an emotional level with the people who are listening to your music. And I think by telling your story, whatever it is, it's a wonderful thing. It's a wonderful gift that you have, which is the ability to be creative and to work that way. And you're right as well about Suzanne, because Suzanne has a creative element to everything that she does, because she brings that ability to something. And you're right, it's a gift. And I think we're all of us lucky to be able to do that. I think that's something that I'm celebrating now in later life, as I've got a bit older. I'm celebrating the fact that I've been lucky enough to be able to express my desire, my art, my creativity in one way or another through my life. And I've been lucky enough to earn a living doing so. And that is a fabulous thing to be able to say, I think, you know, for all of us, really.
Suzanne, we heard at the start of the piece, of course, Magic of Asher Belsky or Belsky. And of course, there's a connection there with Jorgen Carlson. Two artists that you work with. We're going to wrap up actually with another awesome Los Angeles-based band that you look after and that you manage, Little Daze. Would you like to actually explain what it is we're about to listen to from Little Daze?
Little Daze has been around since the late 90s. It is Jorgen Carlson and his wife, Mimi Diaz, of Cuban descent, but they live together and have a studio in Los Angeles in Lake Balboa. And really, they run with Steve Ferroni from Tom Petty. You may know a wonderful drummer. They work with Toshi Yangani, an amazing Japanese guitarist who's on the Jimmy Kimmel show. You'll see nightly. They have a wonderful entourage of people that have come together to create the records. I've been involved with the last two records in like executive production, helping raise money and helping them with distribution. This song Shine that you're going to hear, I felt and Mimi felt, we had a long discussion. Jorgen had an idea of another song and Mimi's like, Suzanne, this is the recent release for the summer. Shine is a time that we're going through right now. And they really are motivated to enlighten and brighten and, you know, help people through these times. So I think that through music, again, I find that it's very healing. And I feel working with these guys, the love of family, the love of like that much of how Jerry and Pamela have their group of people who I luckily know too. This is a group in Los Angeles, very much like Jerry and Pamela's group with Dougie and all the people here. And it's just been a wonderful thing to be a part of. And so they last night or this week, we've talked about this show. And they went back and forth and they both, Jorgen called me, he was in North Carolina on tour. He's like, oh, you know me, and I know you talked to Mimi, let's go with Shine. And that's perfect. And Mimi She's a masterful lyricist and co-writer with her husband. And so here we are. That's Shine.
Well, the sun always shines when Pamela Sue Mann, Jonathan Lindsley, and indeed now Susan Hillary actually connects together. After Shine, we'll be speaking to former Pussycat doll Kimberly Wyatt, who's joining us to connect with her obsession with ensuring that people, youngsters in particular, age 0 to 4 years of age, should be doing much more dancing in schools. It's too late for me, but it's just a different line on that in terms of obviously being authentic. But Jonathan, we'll turn to you at this particular moment in time, because there was a moment in this interview, hopefully editing has sorted this out, when I honestly thought we weren't going to get through it in one piece. Thankfully, we did. We managed to work through that whole process very effectively. So would you like to put those fine two questions to Pamela Sue Mann? Of course, PamelaSueMannMusic.com. Go-to place to actually find out all the magical stuff that's actually there. And Suzanne Hillary, over to you, Jonathan.
Right, well, I'll start with Pamela. It's been great to meet you. And have you had a reasonably interesting time talking here on Alexius's radio show? And would you come back if you were invited?
Yes, and yes. And it's so exciting to actually... be on this with Suzanne. It really is. It's because, as I was saying before, you don't really get to interview your friends often. And so I'd to hear more about Suzanne. So yes, please have me back.
Alexis. Lovely. Well, thank you very much. That's wonderful. And Suzanne, it's been a great pleasure to meet you too. And the same two questions, really. Have you had an interesting time? And would you like to come back in the future and tell us more about your life and the art and the work that you do?
Yes, had a fantastic time. I mean, I know I've been watching these on her social media feeds and was very intrigued. We were hanging out recently and she invited me and said, send your bio and see. I'm very honored to be a part of this. I had a great time. I'd love to come back. I wanted to point that Bernie Barlow from the Moody Blues, a Brit, is on Shine, the backing vocals. And I'm also working with Simon Kirk from Bad Company, another Brit. So let's do a Brit special next time. And I do want to say one last thing to you, Jonathan. Tony Bennett said people are twice gifted. And as Paul McCartney, Sir Paul McCartney is a musician and he's a painter. You too, you're an actor and you're an artist. So honor that today. And I'm just very impressed meeting you and meeting you both and you, Alex, as well.
Thank you, Suzanne. Well, thank you.
It's been awesome. Jonathan, I take it. It's been good for you, good self. I mean, it seems like only yesterday we started these things off back in the 1980s. Zoom then was just a figment of our imagination.
40 years ago. Yes, it's been fantastic. Thank you, Alex. And thanks for inviting me. And it's been a great pleasure to meet Suzanne and Pamela. And I hope we'll meet again either via Zoom or in reality. At some point, when we're all allowed to travel again, is it reality?
Goodness me, Pamela, it's been awesome as ever. We'll speak to you again for Annette Andre very shortly. Suzanne, likewise, a fantastic debut. You've knocked it out of the park finally with one or two teething problems. And Jonathan Lindsley, likewise, keeping on, and let's all shine. The rain.
lives, the fire remains. Breathe, just
dance, dance, dance. It's the importance of dance. It's the importance of movement. Well, somebody who's actually on a mission to get our children dancing for very, very good reasons is indeed the awesomely talented former Pussycat Doll, indeed ace actress and indeed judge on Sky One's Got to Dance. It's Kimberly Wyatt. How are you, Kimberly?
I'm very well, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Always great to connect with your good self. Now, Kimberly, share with us this mission that you're actually on to ensure that together with Busy Bees, you're going to help children get dancing.
Well, I'm a big believer in wellness and fitness through dance. I think it's hugely beneficial in getting kids moving, laughing, and feeling good, which why it's just the perfect activity to support well-being. So I've joined forces with Busy Bees and come up with three fun little dances that I took to their nursery and taught to the kids. And it was amazing to see the transformation.
Now, this is obviously targeted for children 4 years and younger from that point of view. I'm not sure sort of how soon you could actually start to dance. I mean, technically, you could actually start to dance in the womb, I suppose. But in terms of your own sort of line up for this, what are the kind of choreographical steps you've been putting into place?
Well, you got to really, for me, you know, I've been on a mission to get people and kids dancing for quite some time. I've been an ambassador for the Youth Sport Trust and met some incredible, clever women like Baroness Susan Greenfield, who's a neuroscientist, and learned so much about what imagination with movement can do, and really understood the importance of sort of this tipping point that we're at with anxieties and stresses in young kids. And the fact that you make a choice about how you feel about your body between the ages of 6 to 8, and that can last for the rest of your life. So when I went into the nursery, you know, I just made it as creative and imaginative as possible and let the kids become bees and do a little bee dance. Or we did our rocket dance, and the kids, through dance movements, put on their spacesuit and shot up to space in their rocket. And it was like the more fun we had, the more that they really sort of got on board with it and forgot about any, you know, insecurities or anything like that. And they were just buzzing around the room like a bee and landing and just really going for it.
So astronauts covered. You could actually also presumably look at aquanauts as well. What about people who actually want to dance underwater? That's another thought, perhaps.
Well, absolutely. I mean, dance is literally everywhere. It's universal and inclusive, and there's no right or wrong way to do it, which is why it's so fantastic for the early years and just a wonderful tool for exploring imagination and forming connections with others. When everyone is dancing together and sharing that immersive moment, it helps build relationships and break the ice, which can sometimes be so difficult with meeting new people. I know I was one of those kids. I was so shy. I had a really hard time making new friends, and dance was there for me. It taught me a lot of life skills that nothing else could.
Now, 58% of those surveyed suggested that they'd like to see children doing more dance at nursery. I also see that cooking, baking, sports and music were also suggested as things that parents want to see more of. Is there, do you think, a possibility of a fusion link up here, Kimberly, in which you could actually sort of dance whilst you cook and sort of take part in active sports as well?
Yeah, I'm into it. Having won MasterChef and having been, you know, the dancer that I am, it's like if I could find a way to put all of those things together, I would be living the ultimate life.
Yeah, I mean, it's got to happen, surely, somewhere along the line. And then we can have a Pussycat Dolls album from that point of view, the sort of the dance linked with cooking. I sense there's something there somehow.
Right, we're on to something. But, you know, I've been talking about well-being for quite some time and hoping and wishing that we could bring it to young kids, especially seeing just, you know, social media is such an epidemic in itself, and just wanting to sort of arm our children with the skills that they're going to need to feel good about themselves. And it's just amazing to now be in a place where we're, it seems like, you know, as parents, as a society, we're really ready to bring well-being into schools and find ways to help kids feel and have what they need to make it happen.
It certainly works for me. Kimberly, where is the best place to go to find out further details about the Busy Bees survey and more?
You can learn more at busybeeschildcare.co.uk/tiny-dancers.
And you mentioned obviously about obviously the age range being 4 and under, but and obviously up to 6, etc. Do you think this is something you could actually see beginning to percolate through other aspects of society and education, so we can actually even have university undergraduates learning about the importance of dance?
I mean, in the workplace, for undergraduates, nurseries, primary, secondary, like I think that dance fills a lot of holes that we haven't been able to otherwise. And, you know, I'm into sports and academics. I love those types of things, but not all of that sort of speaks to everybody. Whereas dance really does get everybody sort of moving and making you feel like you're part of something bigger. So yeah, the more we can, you know, find ways to bring well-being into the workplace and into the studies, I think the more well-rounded people we will ultimately create.
Absolutely. The sort of mixture of the kinetic movements with respect to other sort of aspects as well. I can see you leading the way in this, Kimberly. It's going to be an awesome scenario. It's been great connecting with your good self this morning. Two final questions. Have you had a reasonably interesting Zoomer with us on the midweek drive today? Has it been good for you?
It's been fantastic for me.
Excellent. So the next critical question, as always, is will you be kind enough to return when you come back?
I would love to.
Girlfriend was fun like me,
big fan,
don't you? freak like me.
Like me.
Don't you? Don't you, baby?
Don't you?
Alright, sing. Don't you wish your girlfriend was wrong like me?
Wrong.
Don't you wish your girlfriend was fun like me?
Big fun.
Trust. It's the essence of the whole human experience, especially when it comes to business. Or is it? Because it was seen that 18.6 million UK adults trust financial advice shared on social media platforms. Is this the time when we should actually be screaming no in loud sort of capital letters? Well, the best two people to actually inquire of the trustworthiness of actually suitable financial platforms, according to this recent survey from the Skipton Building Society, is indeed the aforementioned Skipton Building Society's head of financial advice. That's Helen McGinty. How are you, Helen?
I'm good, thank you.
Excellent. And of course, somebody who we would always trust. We trust every time she's there. In fact, to the extent that I'd say we need a holographic Iona Bain equipped on every situation when it comes to the founder of the Money Blog. Of course, it is the aforementioned Iona Blaine. How are you, Iona?
I'm very well, thank you. Your faith is touching, Alex.
it's true. Iona, if we can come to you first, were you surprised by the findings of this survey? Because, you know, if you're going to go for everything from the TikTok dancers through to YouTube and other sort of areas, is that necessarily the best way to actually be influenced in terms of your financial decisions?
Well, look, Alex, I think it's fantastic that young people are educating themselves about money. When I started the Young Money blog 10 years ago, I was clueless about this whole subject, and I wish that there had been more help available online like there is today. And that's why I started my blog, to help myself and others. And I think most influencers have that same motivation, which is why you're getting so much amazing financial information and inspiration now on social media. But whilst there's nothing wrong with picking up some tips on how to save money or following people who make you feel empowered and confident when it comes to finance, the problem is that too many people are relying on social media for serious financial advice. And that means they're potentially making huge decisions about their money based on something they've read or seen online. And while there are really experienced and well-informed influencers out there, the truth is anyone can set themselves up as a financial expert on social media. There's no entrance exam. So that means someone could be giving out advice that seems trustworthy and credible, but might actually be inaccurate and misleading. And that's why if you are making serious financial decisions, you've got to take professional, regulated financial advice that you know you can trust.
Helen, Skipton, obviously a fine financial services agency. Took over from Scarborough, I think, back in the day.
It's expanded.
It's done a whole range of things. I know this because obviously if I'm a Yorkshire person, I've worked through that whole system. I've even had my Skipton bag that was very sort of impressive of that whole thing. But are you worried that obviously there are customers of Skipton who might be sort of not necessarily getting the right financial advice, or indeed looking to, in this particular instance, finding a female waitress who's now a successful business owner providing financial advice? I mean, that's not to say that it's bad, but it is a worrying trend potentially.
Yeah, we're extremely worried about this, and that's why we've partnered up with Iona, because we really want to raise the awareness of the difference between financial education and financial advice. You know, we all like to go onto social media, and I'll give you an analogy of a doctor. You know, I did last week, I've got a cold right now. I go on and I try and look at my symptoms and diagnose myself, but then the next thing I will do is I'll go and speak to an expert. So, you know, we really welcome financial education across the platforms, but it's extremely important that when it comes to taking out financial advice, you make sure it's coming through a regulated organization, you know, like ourselves, because you've got consumer protection.
And Iona, allowing for the fact that TikTok have actually just banned financial advice, I mean, tragically, that means I won't be able to do my financial TikTok dance with any sort of system. I know,
a bit shocker, but
But is that a good step forward, or will people inevitably, with the way that social media pans out, still actually be more influenced by people who would, again, claim to be a success? In the same way as, I mean, we had the suggestion there from Helen about medical diagnoses. You can get folk actually say, oh, you want to do this, this, this and this. Well, that might be the case, but maybe you need to actually trust yourself, really, trust your own tummy test before you can actually sort of start saying, yeah, I'll take that advice on board.
Well, that's a really good point, Alex. I do think that sometimes people need to really think about whether or not what they're hearing or seeing online is too good to be true. And sometimes you need to listen to that instinct and ask yourself, why is this person telling me this? What is their motivation? And particularly if they are promoting a scheme, they may be unduly swayed by the demands of that particular sponsor and might not be thinking about what's in your best interest. So I think that it is a positive move that TikTok has banned influencers from promoting financial products insofar as they can't team up with financial companies and accept payment for promoting their products. But that doesn't stop people giving advice on TikTok and indeed on other platforms that might not always be accurate. And I think that a lot of influencers now are using social media as a way to become very wealthy. You only have to look at Instagram to see these megastars who are earning tens of thousands of pounds for posts. And it's very tempting for those figures to then want to, jump on the bandwagon of financial advice and promote schemes that perhaps they don't even realize could be quite damaging to their followers. But I've seen so many examples of people, you know, promoting products and schemes that could be incredibly harmful to consumers. So I think it's about understanding that difference between inspiration and information, which for the most part is harmless, and then also really serious financial advice, which could lead to you making big decisions that could go very badly wrong. And as Helen mentioned there, you know, you've got zero comeback if that happens. Whereas if you go to a professional regulated financial advisor, you know that they have to offer you advice that's accurate and trustworthy. And if anything were to go wrong, then you would have some comeback there. So it's really important to understand what you're getting into when you go online, and then getting a second opinion, not just relying on Dr. Google for, you know, all your medical issues. And the same goes for finances as well, not just going online and relying on, you know, the financial advisor that's on Instagram that sounds really confident, but actually might not be giving you the full picture.
Helen, looking at the social media personalities that respondents were provided with, it's interesting that it was the male cryptocurrency investor who was regarded as the least reliable social media personality, whereas the female parenting and money management influencer was regarded as the most reliable person. Wasn't that a bit like saying that obviously the Scottish accent is much more trustworthy than the Liverpool accent, which came out a few years ago? So on that basis alone, you actually, you know, that's who you trust more in terms of looking after your financial matters. Or were you surprised by those findings?
Yeah, and it's coming back to sort of how Iona's explaining. It's really looking beyond, when we created these fictional influencers, it was just based on perception. They all gave the same advice. And so it's really looking beyond the person that is giving you the information, you know, getting that second opinion and making sure that, you know, you're getting your advice from a regulated source. You know, we've seen quite recently that Martin Lewis has gone onto TikTok, which we think is brilliant because, you know, it's going to really help educate and give that financial education. But then we're saying, make sure that when you're actually taking financial advice, you wrapped around the regulation, because there is a strong regulated framework in the UK.
And as we know, obviously, if it was a choice between Martin Lewis and Iona Bain, Iona would win hands down. I mean, bottom line. So we move on from that. Iona, where can people find out further details about this particular survey from the Skipton Building Society and indeed your own online material?
Sure. Well, if people want to find out more about the campaign and how they can receive financial advice, then they should head to Skipton's website, skipton.co.uk/financial-advice. And if you want to find out more about me, I am on Twitter at Iona Young Money, and I am actually on TikTok as well. You can find me on there as Iona Bain, and on Instagram, Iona J Bain. So yeah, I'm on those platforms too, hopefully fighting the good fight.
Exactly. And wiping the floor with Martin Lewis. Sorry, Martin, I know he's a fine person. It's just a fine one.
It's certainly the other way around, Alex, but thank you.
We'll work through that. For the moment, though, Iona Bain, founder, of course, of the Your Money blog, and of course, Helen McGinty from the Skipton Building Society. Huge thanks. Keep on keeping on. And I trust you'll both return in the not too distant future.
Yeah, I hope
thank
so.
You.